A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
This episode contains some disturbing content. Please be advised.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. So today I changed my direction a little bit. Not that I'm not going in the past, but I will tell you I'm not going into the 50s or the 40s or anything like that.
Notice how she said 50s. So we're getting the 60s.
Still not that bad. I'll surprise you. But typically, I'm scouting the Charlie Project for cases that pop up with just enough information for me to cover. But today, I took a dive into our case requests. And it was really important for me to focus in on minority cases, not just cases that are less than known, because that is our goal always, but you know that we want to focus on cases that are of, for example, indigenous persons, persons of color, men, because women are notoriously covered as well. So things like that. So that was my objective, and I think I met that. And I had a case request from Nicole, and I zeroed in on it because it is of a family.
What?
And yes, I know that just that makes someone's ears perk, because we're astounded when we hear about one person vanishing into thin air. But a whole family? That's something entirely different. So I will say this case is not a U.S. case, which is already complicated and anxiety provoking for me, because if you're new here, when we cover cases that happen outside of the U.S., first of all, we don't have the resources that we're used to, such as a big one for Melissa and I is the Charlie Project. It is a database for missing persons. I encourage you all to check it out.
What Amy's not saying is Amy is absolutely terrified that she will do a case and then we will find out later that we got something wrong or it's solved.
Well, absolutely, because our goal here is to do the best that we can. But also, we have particular tabloids and we have reputable news sources that we're very familiar with in the United States. And we don't necessarily know that when we're looking at cases in a different country. It might appear as though it's a reputable news source. But, you know, for example, Canadians might be like, that is definitely a tabloid magazine, so please don't use that. So with that being said, and your understanding of where we come from in that, I'll also add on another challenge of this case is a less than covered case. How? It's a family? I'll never know. But there are few articles, and those few articles, I know you're familiar with this, Melissa, when the article tells only about the circumstances around the disappearance, and it's almost word for word the same across articles.
Yep.
It's frustrating because it's like, all right, I'm waiting for the extra information, the information that's really going to give me that context of what happened here, and it never happens. But I also found some YouTubes of those that have covered the case, and I specifically want to mention them here. We always cite our sources, if you haven't noticed, but we are particular with sources. We want to make sure that they match across articles for the most part. I give specific quote-unquote shout-outs or whatever you want to call them or references in the podcast when I find that there is one particular source that appears reputable to me, but I can only find it in one spot. So those are the Slain Project and Lauren Elizabeth on YouTube, who covered this case and had specific information that I didn't find in articles. So with all that said and moving ahead, I don't even have to ask if you're ready, Melissa.
I am ready. Let's do it. Let's go.
All right. All right. Like I said, this was not a case. There was a lot of information accessible. But nonetheless, I'm going to tell you the story of the Jack family. So what I meant by there's probably more information in Canada where this takes place than there is here in the United States. An example of that is there was a whole episode on the family on a show called Taken. But when I looked into it and wanted to watch the episode, it was stated to me that it is not available in the U.S. because I can only view it in Canada. So that's an example of a barrier. So the members of the Jack family are Ronnie and Doreen, who are both 26, their son Russell, who is 9, and their other son Ryan, who is 4. They were an indigenous family from an area that was well populated with indigenous persons. What I can suspect about Ronnie is that he was close to his family, as evidenced by his frequent communications with them. What we do know a little bit more about is Doreen and her difficult and brutal childhood. And where I got this information was those two YouTubers who covered the case, who appear to specifically get this content from Doreen's sister when she did some type of interview where she was on a panel. So I find that to be reputable since it's coming straight from family. Doreen had 2 sisters, and at a young age, after witnessing her parents' alcoholism and domestic violence, Doreen's mother basically just up and abandoned the family. Doreen's father was left to raise the girls, to which the situation just continued to worsen. Doreen's father continued to drink, and when he was present, he was violent. His inattention left the girls vulnerable to many people coming into and out of the home. Thus, they were sexually abused by these men. The older of the sisters, which I believe I have heard Doreen is the oldest. I've also heard she's the youngest. But the older of the sisters often took the abuse when possible. As you can suspect, the older sibling oftentimes is the protector of the younger ones. So she would sacrifice herself as to protect the younger sisters from being abused themselves. So as you can see, you know, the relationship dissolved between mom and dad, and you'd think maybe that would alleviate some of the issues, but no, that just intensified them. The girls were put into a residential school, and again, you'd think this would have saved them, but it was also horrendous. I have heard of this before I even covered this case, but this just reminded me of this being a reality for Indigenous persons in Canada. These schools often attracted Indigenous persons with the goal of extinguishing their culture, their language, and basically forcing them to adopt Western culture. These homes or schools separated families and were used as a way to abuse and control Indigenous persons. It was a terrible existence. It is unknown exactly when Doreen left, but we do know that at some point she met and dated and married Ronnie Jack. And they became pregnant with Russell when they were just 16 years old.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, but I can get it. I mean, they lived a tough life. Well, I can't speak for Ronnie specifically, but Doreen had left a tough life and, you know, she met someone and fell in love. And, you know, it might have been that idea that this could change her situation. This could be better. And then when she probably got pregnant, again, I can't specifically quote what she experienced, whether it was fear or not. But it could have very much been like, this is my opportunity to love someone and do it better. Although I also have to say, you know, going through that much abuse in your lifetime, do you know what it's like to be treated better? Would you recognize it? And I don't know. They got pregnant and had their son Russell in approximately 1980. I do not have the dates, exact dates of the boys' births. Their relationship wasn't perfect, but they went on to have another son in approximately 1985. This was Ryan. Leading up to the family's disappearance, it seemed like Ronnie did a lot of different jobs to make ends meet. And that's not a quote. It just sounded like he didn't have one specific career that he was focused on. He was just essentially making as much money to provide for his family as possible. Living in Prince George, British Columbia, the family was now on state assistance due to a recent back injury that Ronnie obtained. Things were tough, but it seemed like maybe luck was changing. So Ronnie happened to be out, probably unwinding, on August 1st of 1989. It was a Tuesday. Ronnie was at a pub in town, and Ronnie met a Caucasian husky man, as this is his description, and offered just the opportunity that I think Ronnie needed, hoped for, and this was just luck. For Ronnie and Doreen to come to a logging camp, and I apologize, I tried to find how to say this, so if I'm saying it wrong, feel free to correct me, but Klukol's Lake. This was, I believe, about 25 miles or so from the area in which they lived. Ronnie would inevitably be able to buck logs, and Doreen could help in the kitchen at the camp.
Well, this feels like it's almost too good to be true.
But it gets better, because Ronnie said, oh, we have kids, so what are we going to do there? And this gentleman was like, no problem whatsoever. There's free childcare at this camp. So there's really essentially nothing holding you back. Because I think Ronnie had said, you know, I'm going to have to find childcare for us to be able to leave. And this guy's like, don't even worry about it. Just when it seemed too good to be true, it got better.
How?
Doreen and Ronnie didn't have a car. So the man offered to transport them there. Ronnie, Doreen, and the kids. The catch was the man stated that they needed to leave that night and be there by morning. Well, Ronnie wasn't working, and I can only assume Doreen was not either, because they had a four-year-old at home, and likely Russell was in school. So I'm sure he's thinking, well, there's this wonderful opportunity. Like, I can't pass it up. I have to take it. So upon coming home and packing, Ronnie called his brother to let him know that he'd be gone for 10 to 14 days, and he'd be at this camp job. That was that. It was a good opportunity. At about 1:15 a.m., Ronnie made the same call to his mother. So, like I said, telling the same exact story. The family was last seen at 1:21 a.m. on August 2nd, getting into the mysterious man's pickup truck. The family was not seen or heard from again. Now, you have to remember that Ronnie said, we'll be gone for 10 to 14 days. So even though Ronnie was in communication with his family frequently, as much as they might have thought this is odd or we usually would have heard from him by now, he did say he'd be gone. And they perhaps said maybe he doesn't have the access to a phone like he normally would. And this is 1989. If I must remind you, there sure existed car phones, but only like less than 1% had them. Totally made up that statistic, but I did not see anyone in my childhood but one person ever have a car phone. Communication was landline. So the family was not reported missing until August 25th of 1989. So this is, yes, I get it, a full month later, but you have to remember they left August 2nd early in the morning, and they were supposed to be gone for 2 weeks. So that takes us to what, August 16th-ish,
right,
or so.
And then they probably didn't want to panic. They probably were like, well, maybe he's working longer or whatever.
Absolutely, quite possibly. So another 8-ish days go by, give or take some, and then they're finally reported missing. And very quickly, it was like nothing could come of it. They went and talked to patrons at the bar. They did get a description of the gentleman, and a pretty good one, down to, I think Ronnie's cousin was actually at the pub that night. So he was able to identify things like what he was wearing and such, and we can certainly post that when we post this to our social media. the description really didn't get them anywhere. No one was able to identify this person by name or say, oh yeah, I totally remember Joe coming through town that day or whatever. It really quickly went nowhere. And this case stayed cold for a long time. And it wasn't until January 28th of 1996.
Wait, what?
When, I know, it's, what is it?
Let's 7 years later?
7 years later.
Okay.
That they get a call from a mysterious person. It was a very brief call saying that the family was buried on the south end of, they couldn't make it out, Ranch. They had a few guesses as to what it was. They did a few searches. They've never found the family. In 2019, that was the last time or most recent time that a search has been done, identifying a ranch yet again, and searched the south side of that ranch, and nothing was found.
Okay.
And that's where that's where all of the story ends. There is no sightings. There is no additional leads to the story. Sure, there's a whole evidence locker, but not of evidence that has gotten them anywhere closer to finding the family. Obviously, if you do the math, we have the children being in their late 30s to early 40s. The parents, Ronnie and Doreen, what, are in their 50s?
How, they're 20s when they vanished?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in their about 60s, I believe.
Okay, so obviously we know this guy took them.
We know he literally took them, yes.
But
do we know if he released them?
Well, I was going to say, do we know if he was taken too eventually? Like, do we know if the job ever existed?
Well, I'll rewind for a moment and we can rope that into a theory. So, there's a couple of theories. And Melissa, I, for once, actually went to the Reddit and actually stayed there for a little while.
Oh, my goodness.
No, there's not a ton of information, but I thought that might surprise you anyway.
It does surprise me.
So, did the family walk away from their life? I saw one theory talking about, was Ronnie involved in something illegal and had to leave? Did this man take them to some camp where they disappeared within the camp? Did he take them and do something harmful to them? There's a whole, I don't even know if I could call it a sub-theory, but just the general idea that Indigenous persons were often harmed. There was a lot of violence against Indigenous persons. This was also somewhere near the Highway of Tears. Does that have something to do with it? Were they in a car accident and maybe went off the road and are in the brush somewhere? And that's generally it. So we're looking at foul play, or did they walk away?
So, okay. Do we know if the job was ever real?
So, not to my knowledge. We don't know. We didn't have an exact location. We knew it around the area that it was in, which is the first problem.
Right, because if the job was real, then I could see somehow this guy being a victim too, or who knows, right? If the job was fake, well then why did he take him? Obviously, he had sinister motives.
Correct.
So what are your thoughts, I guess, first?
Well, I'll tell you the least likely to me to answer your question, but also talk out a theory all the same time, is do I think they left their life? And for that matter, do I think Ronnie was involved in something illegal? So, no, I don't think so, because if you were going to leave your life, what could you have been involved in that was so detrimental that it left you and your children missing for 30-ish years?
Well, I mean,
Did they have the means to disappear or start a new life? It doesn't sound like they did. And it doesn't sound like with a back injury, quite like Ronnie's, that he would be able to find just any old work.
Okay. So I agree with they don't leave their life, right? But I don't agree with part of your logic, but that doesn't matter because I agree with that they don't leave their life. So my next question is, I don't think the job is real. But then I have to wrap my head around why he wants him and his family.
Which is a question that has come up, absolutely.
Because it's not like, let's pretend it's a serial killer, right? Like, let's just throw it out there for 1 second. And he's hunting for victims, which is possible.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
You then say, okay, I'll take your whole family?
Right. Which you actually, I don't even know if you meant to do this or not, shined late on a possibility I hadn't thought of, is what if he was not honest with everyone around him about what the job was? He knew very well what he was getting into, but it wasn't the logging or whatever. Unless his cousin specifically heard the conversation, that's a possibility, right?
It is, and my question would be, what is he taking, some illegal job offer and then bringing his family with him?
Right. That part doesn't make any sense. I mean, I know that he couldn't just necessarily up and leave, him and Doreen up and leave, because they would have said, well, we can't do that job, we have children. But I don't know why they would want his wife.
You say they. Do you think that man was working with someone else?
Well, I guess there was no purpose to me saying they. So I don't know.
Okay. So I don't like any of this, Amy.
It's very confusing. Right off the bat.
Let's pretend the job is real for a second.
Okay.
Job is real. It's too good to be true. It's better than most benefits now at companies.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, great, I'm going to take this job.
Right.
Then what happens?
I don't know how his wife got pulled in. The only thing that I can think of is he knew she wouldn't go for him leaving alone, or he knew that they needed a chef, and he said, hey, this is an opportunity for not just me to make money, but my wife too, and double our income.
So did he, and we don't know the conversation, but like, did he ask for his wife to get a job, or did the guy just say, oh, your wife can come too?
I don't know about when it comes to Doreen, but my understanding is he had said, you know, I don't think I have any of my family that could take my kids for that long. And that's when the guy was like, well, don't worry about it. We have a daycare.
Well, right.
Or childcare.
But that still means he already agreed that his wife would go too.
Right. And that is the part that I'm not really clear on, how that came up in a discussion.
Because what are the odds that a guy you are sitting with at a bar, can give you work and give your spouse work and help you care for your children?
And drive you there.
Right. No, that's all fake. I mean, I can't even, I think talking it out and pretending it was real has helped me say it's not real.
But if this guy had something sinister going on, with all the people out there looking for work, you're going to choose the guy to overpower him and his own family? Why not just go for a person that's going to come individually? That's kind of where I get messed up.
Okay, I was curious as to the human trafficking element of it and what that even looked like.
Right, which is why I brought up the Highway of Tears.
Right. So I just Googled, and this is just on Wikipedia, guys. It's not like I pulled up sources. Obviously, we're talking on the fly. The ratifying of the Slavery Convention by Canada in 1953 began the country's international commitment to address modern slavery. Human trafficking in Canada has become a significant legal and political issue. And the legislators have been criticized for having failed to deal with the problem in a systematic way.
Hmm.
So that, to me, says that it's possible.
Now, is that separate in and of itself of the violence against Indigenous persons?
Yes.
So you don't think they were targeted because of that?
Oh, No. Like, I would say if they were targeted because they were Indigenous, it could be for the purpose of trafficking or child labor. Like, we always talk about trafficking as in sex trafficking or human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about child labor in all the countries that kidnap kids to, or used to kidnap kids to make money.
I mean, that's a fair thing to say, and it reminds me of my ignorance around trafficking for those purposes, and honestly, it makes me want to go read some more on that to educate myself, but I know at a minimum it's a real thing. And I guess considering that, that's possible. And in those circumstances, this isn't just one lone kidnapper trying to isolate and hide someone. This is a whole system, which if you want to talk about, well, why aren't there sightings? Well, there you go. You have a whole system that is trying to keep a family hidden and possibly even separated.
So I'm reading, I'll link it in our sources. I'll add it to your source list, Amy. There's worldvision.com, right? And it's about child labor and how to help. And it says, Canadians can come, it's all about how Canada can basically fight child labor by, you know, making sure there's transparency in sourcing and all those things. But here are some fast facts about the world. In the world, there are 160 million of victims of child labor. Almost half of the child laborers are between 5 and 11. Approximately 4.3 million children work in forced labor. Over 1,200 companies operating in Canada are known to be importing goods at a high risk of being produced by child labor.
And I imagine the numbers would still be relevant in 1989, but obviously not as high.
Right. But I think that, like, to rule that out in this situation would be almost irresponsible.
I agree. Well, I guess that leads me to the question of, do you think they're alive or not?
Sorry for sitting here in silence, y'all. I don't know. I think that if this man, the one that wanted to kidnap a whole family, is a serial killer, the answer is no, right? Like, he killed his victims and that's the end of it. If they were kidnapped for labor purposes, I would guess the parents are not alive, but the children maybe.
Yeah, I could see that. So, you're not willing to accept the theory of maybe they got in a car accident.
And what, a UFO took the car for them?
They're just lost in the bush.
Okay, so that just happened in Raleigh, and like maybe a month ago. And a man went missing on Thursday. He wasn't found until Monday, but he went off the road and got in a car accident. No one found his car.
Right, and that happened a couple of months ago. A case from the 50s, 60s, or 70s. I'm sorry, that's a wide gap, but if you Google it, you'll find it. Where he went missing, I think he left his college, and he never made it home or to his destination. And a few months ago, by some luck, in a lake, they spotted a car. And when they, you know, when they found the car, I don't remember if his remains were in it, but all of his things were in the car. And it had shown that he basically went off the road and died in a car accident.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible, but I don't think it's what happened here.
Well, so a Reddit commenter had stated a really good point, which was, so that would make the story about the job real. So if they got in a car accident, you mean to tell me there was no missing persons plea for the man who was recruiting for the job that never showed back up? Which I guess some people who have people that don't show up for jobs just say, the hell with it, that's the way it is. People come and they go. But also, there is a possibility that he was valuable enough where people thought it was weird that he didn't show back up to work again, ever. Or a family that said, oh, that's the description of my brother, on the news, everywhere. Let's call and say that's him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that if it was a legitimate person that was quote unquote trying to find them a job, then yeah, likely someone would have come forward and been like, hey, this person didn't come back to work either.
So that steers us both back to some type of foul play, most likely human trafficking.
Either human trafficking or a serial killer. I'm 50-50.
I mean, I'm more on human trafficking because serial killer often would have been committing similar crimes. And this is labeled as headlines as no other cases like this case of the missing family in Canada. Being a serial killer, kidnapping and harming a family, doesn't seem like a trend to me.
Yeah,
So I guess my theories are human trafficking or a hate crime in general.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like any of it, but I would agree with you.
It's quite possible that they are perhaps buried somewhere, or your theory at least gives me hope that the kids could be alive somewhere, but I don't know. We kind of know the maybe, or have theories about the maybe, how and why, but not the where in the slightest.
Right, and I hope that I don't even know. I hope that there are answers someday. I hope the kids are still alive. I mean, I hope they're all still alive, but I think it's actually for a case that happened in the past. This is one where we could actually say, like, this could be solved and they could still be alive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to make one clarifying point that I didn't as I'm looking at my notes. It's important to know that the call was traced that stated they're buried on X ranch in X location. And it was traced to literally what they is stated in an article, a house party. So it could very well have been some type of prank. But nevertheless, they did follow up on that. My understanding is the family doesn't necessarily believe that they followed up how they should. But we are not new to that discussion. That's all I have. So end of the day, I think
human trafficking
or a hate crime.
Yeah. Or a serial killer. I'm not one ruling out.
I kind of am, but, you know, we often don't agree.
They all got to start somewhere. This could be his first.
Maybe.
Although I don't think they would start with a family. But, you know.
Right? I don't know. And then this is the part where we talk in circles. So we're going to open it up to you guys. Nicole, who requested the case, tell us what you think. Very curious to know what interested you about the case and why you suggested it. And if you disagree or have an alternate theory, let us know.
Wonderful. And we'll be back next week. Actually, that's a lie. We will not be back next week. It will be Memorial Day. It will also be my birthday. So we will not
Happy
be
birthday.
Back. Thank you. We will not be back next week with a whole new case. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a whole new case. And Patreon, we have already recorded your bonus, and it's probably one of my favorite bonuses so far because it just blows my mind. You'll get that next week, though.
Awesome. Well, like Melissa said, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.